Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio from Boise, Idaho. This is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13@greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Well, our listener support campaign continues, and I want to thank Les and Margaret for their support. Thank you so much, and for all donations of $7 or more, we'll send access to our premium site. For all donations of $20 or more during the listener support campaign, I will send a free digital copy of my ebook, All I Needed to Know, I Learned from Columbo, plus one other thank you gift. Some examples, at the $50 level, there's a autographed copy of my paperback book, Tales of the Dim Night. For those in the U.S. and Canada, at the $100 level, we have an audiobook version of the same. I should mention at the $20 level, for fans of Earl Stanley Gardner, we have Harry Mason mystery as performed by the Colonial Radio Theater on the Air. They just do a great job on these Perry Mason programs. More information is available on all the options at support.greatdetectives.net. Now it's time to get into the final episode of A Life in Your Hands. From August 28th, 1952, here now is Alderman Murdered.
The National Broadcasting Company presents Earl Stanley Gardner's A Life in Your Hands.
Was he dead when you found him?
Did he scream?
Did you hear the shot?
Listen while we place a life in your hand. You never know when you step from the safety of your home when you may witness a violent death and be called upon to testify as to what you saw and heard. Murder is a dark enigma that strikes fear into the heart of man. Strange, baffling, mysterious. But the darkest crime one man can invent, another man can unravel. Such a man is Jonathan Kegg, created by Earl Stanley Gardner, the world's most popular writer of mysteries, creator of Perry Mason, Doug Selby, and other outstanding characters. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Jonathan Kegg.
Good evening. One day you might be the person who happened to be near the scene of a crime. On what you remember may depend the life of a fellow man. You never know when a crime is going to be committed. For even now, somewhere in the city, there may be a crime in the making.
You look like you had something on your mind, Sid. Some of the boys been bothering you. Your books?
The operation's running smooth as silk. Petey, it's a small personal matter of 15,000, remember?
Aren't you operating all through the ward? What are you squawking about?
Yeah, and I'm paying off every week to make sure I do.
Well, then...
That 15 G's was a personal matter.
Of course it was personal. But I can't pay you back now. I'm in a spot.
So am I, Petey.
I'll take care of it. After the election, Sid.
I need it now.
I tell you, I haven't got it. You can't get blood from a turnip.
You aren't a turnip, Petey.
Listen... Don't you threaten me. You want every handbook you're running in this town closed up?
That's loud talk, Petey. Things can happen to people who talk too loud. I get out here. Be at your house tonight at 9:00. Money.
Get out of this car.
Petey, don't go getting brave. Might not be healthy.
Miss Wells, get me John Maxwell at his office. shot him, but we haven't advanced. John?
This is Petey Grant. Fine, fine. And yourself? John, you know that little paving job you were interested in? That's right. John, I'm in a bit of a hole. I wonder if you could arrange for an advance. No, I can't fix it sooner. No dice, huh? Okay, John. Goodbye. Yes, Miss Wells?
So, John wouldn't go for it. That's tough.
What do you mean, listening to my phone calls?
Take it easy, Petey.
How many times have I told you not to call me Petey around the office?
There's nobody here but us chickens.
What is it?
I need some money, Petekins.
I told you the last time that you should never... You're never going to get another penny out of me.
Now, now, Petekins, remember your blood pressure.
Not a red cent.
I could have a very interesting conversation with...
With Hazel? She wouldn't believe you.
I could be very convincing.
You're nothing but a dirty little blackmailer.
I want $5,000.
I haven't got $5,000, Karen.
Then get it, and fast.
So you'd talk to Hazel, would you? Well, go ahead.
Suppose I tell the opposition.
Just more campaign mud.
I mean about some of your phone conversations about paving contracts.
Who would believe you?
They'd believe tape recordings of the conversations, Petey.
You mean...
Yes, Petey. I spent $100 for a tape recorder, kept it in the outer office. I've got some views.
You wouldn't do it. It would ruin me.
I don't want to ruin you. All I want is $5,000.
But, Karen, I haven't got $5,000.
Get it.
After the election.
I want it now. Borrow it from your friend Bondon.
He's pressing me for the money that I've borrowed to pay you up to now.
Fuck your house. I don't care how you get it, but get it.
Get out of here, Karen.
If you think I won't talk...
I said get out. Other smart girls have had accidents before this.
You can't scare me.
Then you're not as smart as I thought you were. Get out.
Now, wait a second.
Get out. I've still got friends in this town. You take my advice and be out of town by midnight.
I'm leaving, Petey. But no matter what happens to you from now on, remember, you asked for it. Is that you, Petey?
It's me, Hazel. Where are you?
In the kitchen, dear. Supper won't be ready for half an hour yet.
All right.
Would you like a cup of coffee, dear? You look tired. You feeling all right, Petey?
I'm all right. Tired. Had a tough day.
I'll fix you some coffee.
Fix me a drink, will you?
Of course. What was it? Hard taste or politics?
What is it ever in this year?
I really don't see why you don't fit. Got a good law practice.
Yeah, it's only because I'm an alderman. Know the right people.
You're a fine lawyer and you know it.
I'm a lousy lawyer. And if I'm not reelected, I might as well blow my brains out.
Don't talk like that.
Hazel, how much do you think we could mortgage the house for?
Mortgage the house?
Yeah, I figure we can get about $8,000. I could borrow about $9,000 on my life insurance.
What do you want with all that money?
I've got to have it, that's all.
Tell me the truth, Peter Grant.
You asked for it? So I'll tell you the truth.
You don't have to use that tone of voice.
You wanted the truth. Now you're going to get it. I've been blackmailed.
Blackmailed?
By Karen Wells.
How could Miss Wells blackmail you?
How does a man's secretary ever have a hold over the boss?
Did you do something illegal?
Yes, Hazel. Yes, I did something illegal. But I had to pay Karen so she wouldn't talk.
Is she going to talk to the attorney?
No, Hazel, not to the DA. To you.
But why should she talk? Oh.
Do you understand?
Yes. I'm sorry you gave her the money. How much did you give her?
$20,000.
$20,000? We didn't have that much.
That's why I had to borrow $15,000 from Sid Bondon.
You borrowed $15,000 from Mr. Bondon? Petey, why didn't you just tell me about that woman?
I was afraid.
You're not going to pay her any more money, are you?
Not a penny, Hazel. Not a Penny.
Well, then why are you talking about mortgaging the house and borrowing on your insurance?
It's Sid Bondon. He's pressing me for the $15,000.
But if you do that, they'll take everything we've got.
Sid will kill me if I don't. It's only till after I'm reelected, and then I can pay it off in 6 months.
What if you aren't reelected?
Don't worry, honey. Don't worry. I'll borrow on the house and the insurance. I'll get reelected, and I'll pay it off right away.
But if something should go wrong, we'd be destitute, Peter.
Nothing's going to happen, Hazel. Fix me a little drink, will you?
Of course.
Who the heck could that be? I'll get it.
Hi, Petey. Can I come in?
Sure, Tony. Sure. Glad to see you. Have your hat and coat.
Thanks.
Want a drink?
No, thanks. Not right now.
Who is it, sir?
It's Tony Astio, honey. We'll be in the living room. Come in. Sit down, Tony.
How have you been, Petey? Haven't seen you for a while.
Yeah, been pretty good, Tony. Pretty good. You and the boys?
Couldn't be better. Yeah, nice little house you got here, Petey.
Yeah, the missus and I like it. Looks like you got something on your mind, Tony. What is it?
You're smart, Petey. Plenty smart. That's what the boys and me like about you.
It's my job to be smart, Tony. What is it?
Nothing much. Just wanted to have a chat with you.
Yeah. I know how often you guys drop in for a chat. Let's have it, Tony.
See what I mean? You're smart. They tell me you're going to run again this year.
That's right.
I wouldn't.
What?
I said I wouldn't try to get reelected if I was...
But that's crazy. I've got to have the job.
Some of the boys ain't going to like it. They said I should tell you.
I tell you, Tony, if I don't, I'll be killed.
Might happen, if you try.
What do you mean?
One of the boys wants the job. You might get more votes.
Now, wait a minute, Tony. I've always played ball with the boys. I still will.
No dice, Speedy.
You can't move in on the government.
Credit.
But, Tony...
No buts, pal. We're running Charlie Mellow on the regular ticket. You get out. We'll take care of you and the lawyer, right?
But, Tony, I can't.
Maybe you didn't understand me, Petey. I said you get out. If you don't...
The boys... I need the money. I'll play ball. I've got to run.
Is that it?
That's it.
Boys won't like it, Petey.
Petey, you haven't eaten a bite of this supper.
Oh, don't bother me, Hazel.
Get it off your mind, Petey. You'll feel better.
Tony Astio says I can't run again. The boys are going to run their own man.
The boys?
That's right. The boys, the gang.
But that's silly, Pete. You can get more votes than any hoodlum.
There's one vote they can cast that I can't beat. It's made of lead.
Mm-hmm.
You got it. They'd kill me.
What did you tell Mr. Astio?
I told him I was going to run again.
But wasn't that dangerous?
Of course it was dangerous. But if I'm not running, I can't mortgage the house or get credit on my insurance. And that means I can't pay off Sid Bondon. If I don't pay him, it's twice as dangerous. Gamblers don't like welchers.
What about that girl?
Don't worry about her. I had a friend of mine in the police department run her out of town this afternoon.
Thank goodness.
Now, here's the only way to figure it, Hazel. Sid Bondon gave me till 9 tonight to pay up. It's 9:30 now, and nothing has happened. So probably nothing will happen until tomorrow.
And then?
The first thing in the morning, I'll go downtown and mortgage the house and borrow on my insurance. I'll pay them all.
But they won't give you the money if they know you're not running again.
After I've got the money, then I'll announce my withdrawal from the race. Yehuda.
You sit still, dear. I'll get it.
You fix the coffee. I'll see who it is. Whoever it is, I'll get rid of him in a minute. It's probably Sid for his money. I can stall him off till tomorrow if I promise the dough. You?
Yes, me, Peterkins. Thought you were smart burning my tape recordings and getting your tame copper to run me out of town.
I told you not to mess with me, Karen.
Wouldn't your wife like to hear what I have to say?
Get out. I'm letting you get out of town with your health. You bother me once more.
I'm leaving, buddy. Don't worry about my health. Worry about your own.
Was that the woman, Petey?
Were you listening?
was worried. I followed you.
That girl tried to blackmail me too often. Just once too often.
But she did have something over your head.
Yes. Yes, I'm sorry. I do love you.
And I love you, too. More coffee?
Oh, you're wonderful, Hazel. Yeah, thanks. I will have another cup of coffee.
Why don't you answer? It's almost 10.
Don't answer it. You can't be sure.
Go into the front room. If someone's safe, you'll be able to tell, then you can come back.
Talk up good and loud.
I will. Why, Mrs. Billings from next door.
Excuse me, Mrs. Graham, but I saw lights on and I figured you were still up. I wondered if I could borrow a glass of milk. I haven't much left, and the children...
Why, of course, Mrs. Billings. We have plenty. Why don't you take a whole quart?
Well, now, that's awful kind of you. If you're sure it won't run you short.
Not a bit, not a bit.
Good evening, Mrs. Billings.
Why, good evening, Mr. Grant.
Petey, would you pour Mrs. Billings a glass of milk, please? I want to go upstairs for a minute.
Sure, sure, glad to.
I'll be back in a minute.
You sure one glass is going to be enough, Mrs. Billings?
Oh, plenty, Mr. Grant.
Are you sure you don't want a quart?
Well, if you can spare it.
Why, of course we can. Here.
Well, now that's right neighborly of you, Mr. Grant. I'll return it tomorrow.
No hurry at all, Mrs. Billings.
Well, thank you very much. I'll be running along now.
Let me get the door for you.
No, thank you. Nice folks, the Grant. Hope I don't forget to return this milk. Never did return the sugar I borrowed last week. Oh, well, he can afford it. Good heavens!
Help! Help! My husband's been killed!
Sit down, Mr. Keg.
Thank you.
Now, what is this all about? I don't see any reason for an amicus curiae in this case. The presentations have been quite fair.
Well, first, sir, I appreciate your seeing me in your chambers. Now, a lot of this case has been tried in the papers. The whole city is worked up about it.
I can understand people getting worked up when a public official is murdered.
They should, but sometimes they want a scapegoat.
Possibly, but you'll have to give me a more tangible reason than that before I can permit you to serve as amicus curiae.
Well, as matters stand now, Karen Wells is almost certain to be convicted. She was found loitering nearby. True, the gun was found on the back porch. But how many women know enough to file the numbers off a gun? How many would choose a weapon as large as a .45? Or could hit the broadside of a barn with one from outside the kitchen? The thing I'm getting at, Your Honor, is that no connection between the Wells woman and the murder weapon has been established.
You think she's innocent?
I believe further cross-examination is indicated.
There's not much to go on. Still, it is a point that hasn't been stressed.
A human life is at stake, Your Honor.
All right. I'll go along with you. All we want to do is get the truth. The court will permit the entry into this case of the well-known attorney, Mr. Jonathan Keg, as amicus curiae. Mr. Keg serves neither the prosecution nor the defense, but only the court, in an attempt to arrive at the truth. You may proceed, Mr. Keg.
Thank you, Your Honor. Call Mr. Sidney Bondon to the stand. How much did Peter Grant owe you?
$15,000.
You had his note?
I gave it to him on his word.
Do you usually lend people that much money on an unbacked word?
Quite often.
I believe you are a gambler, Mr. Bondon.
I have various interests.
As a businessman, you must know that you can't collect a debt when there is no document to show.
I usually collect what's owed me.
How?
I ask for it.
I see. And you had asked Grant for his $15,000?
For my $15,000.
Of course. When did you ask him? The morning of the day he died?
I believe it was that day.
According to previous testimony by Mrs. Grant, you gave him till 9 o'clock that evening to pay up.
That's right.
Did he pay you before he died?
He did not.
He died around 10. Tell me, Mr. Bondon, what would you have done if he had refused to pay you?
I suppose I'd have asked him again.
Then why the time limit of 9 that night?
Oh, you know how it is. Makes people put out an extra effort to get the money. Scares them a bit.
What are they scared of?
Just scared.
Isn't it true that occasionally unpleasant things happen to people who don't pay their debts to gamblers?
Are you getting it?
Is it true or not?
Oh, I've heard of things like that, but...
You have heard of people being hurt who didn't pay their debts to gamblers?
Well, sure, but you
That's
see...
all, Mr. Bondon. You may step down.
Well, now, you can't insinuate
you
that
You may
I would...
step down. Call Mr. Tony Astio. Mr. Astio, what do you do for a living?
I'm a businessman.
Any interest in politics?
Not personally.
How do your closest friends earn their living?
They're businessmen, too.
Mrs. Grant, in her earlier testimony, said her late husband referred to you and your friends as gangsters.
He was nuts. He was just scared of his shadow.
You visited him the night he was killed?
Yeah. So what?
The witness will confine himself to answering questions.
Did you advise him not to run for re-election as alderman?
I might have.
Just how did you try to persuade him not to run?
I didn't try to persuade him. I just explained that a friend of mine wanted to try for the job. And that if he ran, he couldn't expect the help of me and my associates.
Did he agree not to run?
No, he said he was going after the job again.
Did you threaten him if he ran?
Threaten him? Why wouldn't hurt a fly?
That's all, Mr. Astio. You may step down. I would like to call the victim's wife, Mrs. Hazel Grant. Mrs. Grant, can you tell us exactly what happened the night your husband was killed?
I've already... What is it you want to know?
Everything you remember of what occurred.
Well, Petey came home for supper around 6. He was very tired and depressed. He wanted a drink. I asked what was wrong, and he told me about the Wells woman.
What did he say about
her? He said she'd been blackmailing him. He was going to have her run out of town.
What else did he tell you?
He said he'd have to pay Mr. Bondon $15,000 he owed him. Or Mr. Bondon would kill him.
He was afraid of Mr. Bondon?
Yes, sir.
What did he propose to do about this debt?
Well, he talked about mortgaging his insurance in our home.
And what else happened?
Then Mr. Astio came to the house and told him he couldn't run again. I said that was silly and that he could win easily. And he said they had one vote that he couldn't beat because it was made of lead.
Did that seem to frighten him?
Yes, it did. He felt that he couldn't get loans unless he was going to be elected, so he planned to borrow the money on the house and the insurance first thing in the morning when everyone thought he'd be reelected and then withdraw from the race that afternoon. That way he could pay Mr. Bond and still not get hurt by Mr. Astio and his friends.
I see. Did anything else happen that evening?
Yes, that Wells woman came to the house. She was furious because Petey wouldn't give her any more money, and when Petey ordered her out, she threatened his life.
Had you any other visitors before your husband died?
No, sir, that was all. Oh.
Oh? Did you remember something, Mrs. Grant?
Well, I don't think it's important, but if you want everything...
I do.
Well, a neighbor, Mrs. Billings, stopped by to borrow a glass of milk.
Was this before or after your other callers?
It was after. Only a few minutes before Petey.
I understand, Mrs. Grant. You may step down. That'll be all.
Thank you, sir.
Your Honor, I should like a subpoena issued for an entirely innocent bystander, a person who just happened to be nearby when this crime was committed.
I will call anyone you wish, Mr. Keg, and that person must testify to what he or she has seen and heard.
Jonathan Keg is about to call as a witness a person whose only connection with this crime is that person happened to be near the scene when the crime was committed. Suppose you were that person. Could you remember exactly what you have heard and testify to it under oath? It would be important that you remember, for you would hold a life in your hands. The Labor Day weekend lies just ahead. The long weekend that will find millions of America's motorists, picnickers, and sportsmen taking to the woods. More and more people outdoors spells more chance for forest fires caused by carelessness. Learn and follow these four simple rules of forest fire prevention. Crush out cigarette, cigar, and pipe ashes. Break matches in two after using. Drown all campfires, then stir and drown again. Find out the law before using fire. Remember, only you can prevent forest fires. Mrs. Joshua Billings, the Grants' neighbor, has been called to the stand. She has been sworn as a witness and is ready to testify as Jonathan Kegg says.
Mrs. Billings, on the night Mr. Grant was killed, you called to borrow some milk?
Yes, sir, I did.
How long were you there?
Oh, a couple of minutes.
Was anyone besides the Grants in the house when you arrived?
No, sir.
Did you enter by the front door?
No, sir, I came through the kitchen.
That's the room in which Mr. Grant was killed?
That's the way I heard it.
I see. Who let you in, Mr. or Mrs. Grant?
Wait a minute. It was Mrs. Grant.
Then you didn't actually see Mr. Grant?
Well, I certainly did. He came into the room a minute or so later.
And then Mrs. Grant gave you the milk and you left?
That's right. No, wait a minute. Mr. Grant gave me the milk. The Mrs. had to go upstairs for something.
And you left as soon as you got the milk?
Correct.
You saw no one else about?
Not a soul.
What happened after you left?
I went home. I was just going in when I heard the shot and the scream.
What did you do then?
Oh, I kept right on going and locked the door. I have four children.
In all that time, you saw no one?
Not a soul.
Just exactly what did you hear, Mrs. Billy?
Just what I told you. I heard a shot.
The shot was fired from the back porch through the window. The window was shattered. Did you hear the glass breaking?
Oh, sure.
Then you heard two sounds.
That's right.
You heard the glass breaking, then a shot. And nothing more?
Oh, yes. There was something else.
Yes?
Somebody screamed.
Then there were three sounds. The breaking glass, the shot, and the scream.
Very definitely.
By your testimony, Mrs. Billings, we judge that the murderer broke the window, shot Mr. Grant through the hole, and then someone screamed as a reaction to the shot.
No, sir. That isn't the way it was. The shot was first.
And you distinctly heard the glass break?
Yes. It was really a separate sound.
And it followed the shot?
Yes. First there was the shot, then the glass breaking, and then I heard somebody scream.
Would you say that these sounds overlapped each other?
Why, definitely not.
Thank you, Mrs. Billings. That'll be all. I should like to recall Mrs. Hazel Grant.
Really, Mr. Kegg, I don't see where this is getting us.
If the court please, we've almost finished this case. I assure Your Honor, I shall be done in 5 minutes.
All right, I'm going to hold you to that.
Thank you, Your Honor. Be seated, Mrs. Grant. I have only a few more questions to ask. Your husband believed he would be killed if he ran against the wishes of Mr. Astio's friends?
That's what he told me.
He also believed Mr. Bondin would kill him if he didn't repay the $15,000 he'd borrowed.
Yes.
You were with him in the kitchen when he was shot?
Yes. His back was toward the window. She shot
Now, him. As I understand it, he planned to mortgage the house and borrow on his insurance to pay off Bondin.
That's right.
The only chance he had to get that money back was if he should be reelected.
Yes.
And Astio wouldn't let that happen. It seems that if Peter Grant had done what he planned, you and he would have been in bad financial straits.
We would have been destitute.
Are you destitute now, Mrs. Grant?
No. I've got the house and some insurance.
Yes, now. Your husband had been playing around with another woman. She was blackmailing him. And it was only through your husband's death that you saved your home and his insurance policy.
Yes.
Mrs. Grant, why didn't you testify that you had left the kitchen just before your husband was killed?
That's ridiculous. I never...
But Mrs. Billings testified that you did. And when you left the kitchen, leaving your husband and Mrs. Billings alone, you got his gun, didn't you? A gun that he kept because it could never be traced to him.
That's not true.
I really can't permit this, Mr. Kegg.
Your Honor, look at the facts. If Bondin should kill Grant, his $15,000 was gone forever. Astio has admitted his candidate has withdrawn from the race. They both lost by the killing. As for the defendant, Karen Wells, she knew she would be picked up and at least booked for blackmail. The only person with a lot to gain, a house and insurance, was Hazel Grant.
That's a fine theory. Can it be proved?
If the court please, the testimony of our innocent bystander, Mrs. Billings, proves it.
She heard the window glass crash a second or two after she heard the shot. If the killer had stood outside and broken the window before firing, she would have heard it first. If he had fired through the window, it would have been close to simultaneous. But with a second or two between the shot and the glass crash, the shot could only have come from inside the kitchen, and only the Grants were there, by Mrs. Grant's own testimony.
Then the gun must have been thrown out through the window.
I believe so, Your Honor.
Mr. Cagg, that was a most thrilling case. And what satisfaction you must get from saving an innocent person who is wrongfully accused.
There would be fewer of them, Mr. Stone, if all citizens responded to their responsibilities more readily.
You're so right.
But I'm not here to preach, only to invite our friends to watch for our return to the air. Thank you, and good night.
Good night.
A Life in Your Hands is created by Earl Stanley Gardner, with script by Bob McKee, directed by John Cowan. Jonathan Keg is played by Carlton Cadell, with musical effects by Adele Scott, conducted by Whitey Berquist. This has been a Bell production. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Welcome back. Well, those summer series certainly had low-key farewells. And, of course, it did not return to the air. This case is somewhat of an interesting closure one. On one hand, it was nice and a touch of realism to have a judge actually gives some pushback about Jonathan Keg entering the case. Of course, that may have happened in previous seasons. We just don't have a whole lot of recordings from that time. The other thing I have to say, first of all, this guy really was having an awful day, kind of capped off by the murder, you know, just kept getting worse and worse until 10:30 when the murder occurred. The thing you do realize, too, listening to this, is that the neutral witness that Jonathan Keg was able to produce was actually somebody who the murderer suggested, who he would not have known about had she simply said, no, that was everybody who came over. A long litany of perfect murder suspects. And to be honest, I kind of suspected her from the get-go because she was being awfully nice and kind and patient under the circumstances, given that she was the wife of a really unsavory character in a mystery melodrama. You know, honestly, I suspected her from that point. And then the fact that she produced the name of the witness, thought, no, you know, if you'd committed the murder, you wouldn't be stupid enough to give them an additional witness that they just did not know about. But it all worked out for Jonathan Keg, who once again is able to find the truth. And, you know, bringing home the importance of people cooperating with police and sharing their knowledge when witness to a crime. So, all right. Well, that will actually do it for today. We will be back tomorrow with Let George Do It. I do want to let you know what's coming up next week as we've wrapped up A Life in Your Hands. We will be doing Cases of Mr. Ace, starring the great George Raft. Oh, and one more thing, to quote that great Lieutenant Columbo before we go. We do have a new review on iTunes. This one is from Tavil Stevens. And they write, a great entertainment. Listening in the evening is restful and enjoyed by the family. Great to hear the voices of memorable people. And that is a review of the app from our from the Amazon App Store, which sells the app for the Android, and appreciate your positive comments and review. We will be back, as I said, tomorrow. Comments to Box 13 at GreatDetectives.net. Remember to support our listener support campaign ending on Saturday. Full details, support.GreatDetectives.net. And follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.